Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Dan, a Continental Classic heavy edition of Dynamite with a some good matches, including a really good main event with Jon Moxley and Swerve Strickland. I want to throw to you first. What did you think about the finish? Moxley, a yank of the pants, Swerve shoulder clearly up, I assume by design to, quote, protect him. If not, yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't know. Seems like a flaky finish to me after a hard-fought battle that kind of cheated people out of, you know, what I call brave booking. Like, people can win and lose, you know? It doesn't always have to be as controversial as the Kansas City Chiefs when they lose, Dan.
Well, you know, and it hit me where I live. I still have to listen to you and Rich. I have that downloaded. And, he and I were at the game together. I'm sure he shared some of that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to listen to that tomorrow. I mean, it's the wrong shoulder, right? Like, the referee had to, like, look away. Like, you're not going to watch the shoulder while you count. I mean, it's the one that's right in front of him. So I've been thinking a lot about Texas wrestling and Von Erichs and all this stuff tonight, and thinking of kind of that era. And I think of, like, the relatively famous finish, like, where Harley Race won the NWA title for the last time from Ric Flair. And you could argue they both put their shoulders up, but, you know, the one Race put the one up further away from the referee, and so Flair didn't understand that he'd gotten pinned and all that. But to execute, I guess to me it's the execution I like even less than the cop-out finish, because it's just like the referee looks like a complete idiot. I mean, it's and Taz called it immediately. I don't know.
If
you heard that. Yeah, so it's like, I'm guessing it is by design. I don't remember. They get some weird stuff in G1, but I can't remember that one happening in G1. And if you're trying to pattern yourself after G1, then yeah, have clean finishes. I mean, guys lose in G1 all the time. And I mean, at least they sold it well. Like, Moxley played it off well, and Swerve was sufficiently frustrated. And
right,
I love what they've done with Swerve. He's a star. Like, he's amazing right now. But yeah, cop out's the right word. I mean, this show struck me as uneven. There were things I really liked, and there were some clunkers.
Yeah, so I agree the execution wasn't good, but I'm more bothered by the concept than the poor execution. Not that either is good, but I would flip that around.
I can understand that. Yeah, absolutely. Like it's a macro thing.
Yeah, and like going into the tournament, the lineup was, or the they didn't explain how wrestlers qualified that I've heard of, and so we got, you know, some questionable people: Mark Briscoe, Jay Lethal, Danny Garcia, not classified as top tier talent storyline wise, case wise in AEW. How did they make the field? Why? They could have explained it in multiple ways. I've said they could have had a random draw, a second chance. You know, here's the top 8 or something, and then there's going to be a random draw for anyone else who enters in the tournament. They could have been whatever. They could have been creative and come up with some explanation. They didn't. And so it just feels like, oh, in a meta sense, they're included to do jobs. And that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Mark Briscoe lost every match. Dan Garcia's losing left and right. It's disappointing in that sense that they're telling a story with Danny Garcia, who, you know, he's got frustrated with, you know, the dance backfiring on him. So that's fine. That was expected. But my other fear was, all the obvious people are going to do clean jobs, and all the top people are going to have tainted finishes despite banning people from ringside. They just come up with new ways to do cop-out finishes, and unfortunately, that's kind of happened. We haven't had draws, we haven't had upsets, and we haven't had brave finishes. We're just, like, in abundance of that, of top guys beating top guys clean with their finishers or not, but not roll-ups, not reverse roll-ups. I mean,
right,
satisfying finishes, not a 3-0 score like the Vikings this past week. Give us something satisfying and exciting and decisive. You can tell stories with that, and we just haven't had enough of that. So to me, it's defined the tournament as good matches, predictable outcomes, and it's not over yet. And it's, I mean, I've been mostly positive about this tournament in the last week. So this isn't me just like being negative all along, but that main event finish kind of triggered it a little bit, along with just, you know, looking at the chart and seeing a lot of predictability here. So this was a chance for Tony Khan to go, you know what, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to break some of my crutches that I have as a booker. I'm going to show that I can look someone in the eye, or send someone to look someone in the eye and go, you're losing tonight. Clean.
Yep.
That's your job. It plays into the idea, the narrative out there that Tony doesn't want to tell people to do jobs. He doesn't have leverage. He doesn't have respect to the top people. And you know, that isn't necessarily true in this case, because he probably isn't asking for clean jobs. So that's, you know, a different category of disappointment, but it plays into that perception that, oh, there's a lot of top guys who you don't see them losing very often. So, yeah. It's a really enjoyable show if you set that aside. For a show built around just a lot of bell-to-bell action, I like the tournament. I think Excalibur and Shivani and Taz are doing a great job on commentary, talking about the stakes. The chart is really clear, and, you know, they're flashing that up on the screen afterwards. Little brief vignettes with backstories on the journey that the wrestlers have been on. We didn't get much promo-wise, unfortunately, but at least there was a brief vignette with Mox and Swerve. So, yeah, Dan, I'll throw it back to you for – I said a lot there. Anything
else? Yeah, well, it brought a couple things to mind, Wade. I think their past time where they should have had – well, and again, like in G1, I don't want to be wrong about this, but countouts, I think, are worth 2 points instead of three or whatever. Like, it's not all the same. Here it wouldn't have mattered if there's a countout, but it's the same as a pin. But their past time to have a draw in this tournament, in my opinion – I mean, kind of.
And I would have taken that tonight. I mean, it was sort of be predictable. Oh, finally, two people. You can't imagine who's going to win, and they do a draw. Maybe we'd eye roll that, but not. I don't think so, because they haven't leaned on that hard, and it's certainly better than a shoulders up pin. Go ahead, yeah.
Right. Well, that's the other thing, and I think you'd agree with this. I know, I mean, Swerve, like the people like Swerve hasn't been winning enough. We're worried about Swerve. I think, to me, that's like not an issue right now. And I think either one of those guys could have easily afforded to do a clean job here. I think that, and then it's still part of a bigger story. And I do see the potential for a three-way tie with a 4-1 record with Jay White, Swerve, and Moxley, which would be interesting, because I don't know how they would, you know, I was looking at the chart and I thought, well, okay, Jay White still got to wrestle Moxley, and he could certainly win that match. And then, I don't know what, you know, then it's a true three-way tie, because they all beat one another. And that's just looking ahead. And it would be an interesting dilemma that they would have to do something, and they may end up adding something to the schedule. But yeah, I just, that was the thing. I think, you know, it was like, these guys are somebody should have done a real job here, or a draw. Not that. I went back and watched it, because I was like, you know, I'm not like Mr. Focus all the time. And I mean, it just was so obvious just watching it live and not being like convinced that was going to be the finish. I was like, this guy's shoulders up at two. Like, it's not even close. I didn't care for it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll certainly talk more about the tournament. I want to talk about the good aspects of the matches we saw tonight in the tournament. Also, just some good wrestling and delve into that. But let's pause and introduce ourselves and the show. Give out the phone number and email, and then move on. We have some emails coming in on the Golden Jets Big Bill Ricky Stark segment.
That's we'll get the uneven part, Wade. I want to talk about that. But yes,
absolutely. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, December 13th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter. The website, pwtorch.com, with live TV coverage, live pay-per-view and PLE coverage, flashbacks, breaking news, analysis, ratings reports, all kinds of good stuff. Exclusive columns that you won't find anywhere else, including Continental Classic Tournament Overview. And much more. So hope you're checking that out multiple times a day. There's definitely good stuff, a good variety of opinions, we're proud of the content over there. Also, I host a variety of podcasts: the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows, Following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, and also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's our blue logo show. This is our red logo show. The blue logo show is a more traditional podcast without the live caller format. And our flagship edition usually drops on Tuesday nights. And yesterday, Rich Fan joined me, and we spent 45 minutes or so on CM Punk and that situation. We got some good feedback on that. In fact, David Spencer of Columbus, Indiana, I'm going to read this. Wade and Rich, hope Rich is hearing this, just felt compelled to reach out with words of appreciation for your in-depth analysis of all the CM Punk speculation. Other premium websites are giving shallow coverage of CM Punk's place within the hierarchy of WWE now. And my friends and I cannot stop discussing this. So please keep digging deep into what WWE can do with Punk. I love all the Punk coverage. Can't wait to see the Royal Rumble 94 repeated with Cody and Punk. And I'd love to see Punk tease either Roman or Seth with his Rumble victory and make them feel disrespected by not picking one of them. All right, so I put that out there because it's just a listener plug to check out the flagship if you haven't yet. We definitely covered the Punk situation from an array of angles. I know he's tearing it up on social media in terms of views, but he's not making a huge difference in ratings. And I reported on that in a write-up at pwtorch.com in the news section, the ratings sub-tab, if you want to click on that to get to it. He was the fourth most watched segment of Raw for his debut. A lot of factors played into that. Not super damning. SmackDown did better, but not great, great. And Raw, you know, did okay, did good. You know, it's up, but it's not like, whoa. So what does that mean? Rich and I talked about it. Maybe it doesn't mean a lot. And maybe it's a good sign for WWE in a way, and I explain why in the conversation. So check that out if you haven't yet. We also talk a lot of AEW in the second half of the show and some other topics too. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app. And you'll see the blue and red logos pop up. Subscribe to both. And you're good. We're all over. I mean, you search on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Search Wade Keller, and it'll pop up. Same thing while you're at it. Search PW Torch to get the PW Torch Daily Cast. That is a free podcast feed with daily shows, a different show every day of the week, a real wide array of hosts and themes and formats. There's at least one show that you'll make appointment listening, I am confident, maybe all seven. Of the daily shows. And when you search PW Torch, you'll also see the charcoal logo that shows PW Torch VIP. That's our VIP free sample feed. So it costs you nothing to sign up. And if you're using Apple Podcasts native app that syncs with CarPlay, you can actually upgrade to get all our VIP podcasts using your Apple account within the Apple Podcast app when you download the free PW Torch VIP free sample app. So lots of ways to subscribe and be a VIP member and get our shows, including on Patreon, which gives you Spotify access, by the way. Or you can subscribe through our website and use credit card, debit card, or PayPal. And it is compatible with Apple Podcasts and many other popular podcast apps. You get a feed that you enter without having to go to advanced settings or enter a password. It's a pretty slick setup we have, pretty frictionless. And when you do that, you not only get our VIP shows, but also ad-free versions of our free shows like this one with the commercial breaks edited out. So it's a nice streamlined listening experience. The other voice you hear on the show is Dan Keeser. He is a PW Torch contributor, a now semi-frequent co-host here on our AEW post shows, although it's been a couple months, Dan. I know college football season and real life work can make it tough to schedule too regularly, but it's great that it worked out to have you on tonight to catch up with your thoughts on things, especially with your New Japan knowledge, and you've already flexed on that, comparing what AEW is doing with their version of a round robin tournament to New Japan. Welcome.
Oh, well, thank you, Wade. And yeah, it's a bit of a celebration day for me. I gave my last final today, and so I'm kind of glad to get a little bit more now as college football is winding down. We're going to be heading back to Dallas to watch Missouri in the Cotton Bowl here in a couple weeks. We've had a really great season for the alma mater, but yeah, I'm happy to be here and happy to have a decent amount to talk about. I mean, generally, I thought this was a good show. There's a lot to like here, and then some things to pick apart too, which makes for hopefully an entertaining podcast and something to reflect on.
Yes, well, very cool. So let's give out the phone number and the email. If you're live streaming our show and you haven't called in yet, but you want to participate, here's how you do it. You call 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That will flag you on our switchboard and let us know you want to be on the show. You can do that anytime during the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Please note we have switched from @PWTorch to @gmail. I've been mentioning this on the shows, but I'll repeat it for a little while here. If you had been sending any emails, we found out some of them were not getting to us on auto-forwarding from our server. So I apologize for that. And rather than constantly try to fix it, I won't get into the technical aspect of it. We just decided to switch over to Gmail. So wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com is how you can send in your comments or questions for our post shows and also our flagship, our regular show. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. All right. So Dan, I actually, speaking of the emails, I mentioned the feedback on that, on the
Golden Jets. Or the Winnipeg Jets, because we're not paying attention. We're not even thinking about what we're talking about.
Well, look at you go. All right. Let's
not me, not you. Anyway.
Yes. Okay. We'll start with Azan from St. Louis. He goes, as Paul Heyman once said, play to people's strengths. Kenny Omega's been in the spotlight for nearly 10 years now, but he's never had a great promo. So if you've been a fan, you should be aware of this. Let Omega in the ring speak for him. I think he means let his in-ring wrestling speak for him. Azan has other questions, but I'm going to read what JB said about this segment too. JB from Detroit says, I think that the Golden Jets Big Bill Ricky Starks promo went a little too far off the rails for me. We all know Kenny can be a bit too much of a goof at times, which was definitely on display tonight. And Chris Jericho can also be too cute and self-indulgent on the mic as well. I wish that it would have stayed a little more serious and less focused on Bill's past with Enzo in WWE. Also, I'm not sure how many people actually watch Dynamite actually know who Billy Starks is, so that line most certainly fell flat. And let's see. It looks like Jason B. also responded and said the Golden Jets Big Bill Starks segment was so bad, it was painful. And okay, and that's all, actually all he said about that. So I'm saving their other comments on other things for later. But there's a sample of three emails that came in, all ripping on that. Dan, I'm going to for people who didn't see it, by the way, it was Kenny Omega and Jericho in the ring. They each made their ring entrance. Kenny made an unfunny joke about how he didn't know the lyrics to Jericho's song until he heard the fans sing it. Kenny looked like, you know, ultra casually, you know, just dressed kind of like he.
That's polite.
Yeah.
Looked like he just fell out of bed.
That's what I've been saying for years about him. He doesn't dress like a star. He feels like he doesn't have to because, you know, when you get 6 and 7 star ratings and, you know, everyone pick your phrase, it tells you how great you are. You know, and you don't have a boss who insists on elevating people who have great reputations to start with, but there's things you do when you're a national TV star on a weekly basis that everyone else does who wants to draw money and help their company. And it's just, for whatever reason, it's not Kenny's natural state and no one's pushing him to do it. So yeah, that, and then
I have a real problem with this, Wade. I have a real problem with this. And I know, like, you know, your job has evolved over the years. And so you have the I won't reflect on the Jason Powell dress code joke from back in the day, but I thought that was a wonderful thing that you did. But, you know, at certain times that you're going to be appearing on the media and you're going to dress appropriately. I had to get up at 6:30 in the morning to go give my final at 7:30. And I wear a collared shirt and a nice polo because that's my job, because I'm a professional. And I get paid a heck of a lot less than Kenny Omega does. And I've been a huge Kenny fan. Like, that's one of the main reasons I got into AEW. But somebody's got it. Like, that's pathetic. Like, to just not care enough to be even a modicum of professionalism in the way you present yourself is ridiculous. And it just seemed like they were winging that promo on top of it. And I sense, you know, Ricky Starks is trying to hold it together. He certainly doesn't show up like he just fell out of bed. I mean, this is important to those guys too. Like, you got to show everybody respect. And if you're going to be on TV or a pot, whatever, you're getting recorded, you're going to dress appropriately and you're going to be prepared to do your job. And the entire job is not just in-ring stuff. And Ricky Starks, I think, took a shot at Jericho's outfit. It was at Jericho's. Yep. And I'm like, well, why are you, I mean, at least he's trying. I mean, yeah, it may be kind of a weird look, but I mean, this guy, they just signed you to a new contract. Like, if you don't care, you shouldn't have signed the contract. And, you know, apparently he didn't want to be in the Continental Classic. I mean, like, I'm really, I've been a huge Omega fan, and I'm still going to be excited about his match in Tokyo Dome and this, that, and the other, but man, I'm just like, this isn't, to me, that's unprofessional. And I don't know. And I'm just like, are you trying to give Jim Cornette more ammunition to go after you? Like, is it like, screw you, I can do whatever I want, so I'm going to be, I don't know. Like, I'm like, you're on national television, and you just are kind of, you didn't seem very engaged to me. I thought it was a bad, bad segment. And I would push back at Adon a little bit, who's been a really good contributor a few times I've been on here. It's not that Kenny Omega can't deliver a great interview. Go watch his press conferences at New Japan. You know, go, when he's in that environment, he can be amazing. The stuff he did with Will Ospreay this year is unbelievably great. Karen, he's got to focus. He's capable of a lot better than that. And I don't know why he would hear what I have to say, but I hope he does, because I'm really disappointed.
So the phrase very early on when people started to get to know Kenny in AEW is, he's weird. Like, it was just, you know, it wasn't really a term of endearment, but it also wasn't meant to, like, you know, crush him as a human being. It was just an observation. You know what? I didn't expect this. He's kind of a weird guy. Okay, fine. The problem is you want him to understand that unless it's a feature, not a flaw, to be super casual and frumpy and I don't even know. You know, like, to not look like you're even trying. If that's not a feature, then change it. And the phrase that's worse than being called weird, because, you know, I mean, that, you know, isn't Portlandia based on that? Like, you know, don't they say we're weird or whatever? Like,
yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah,
you know,
you
can turn that into an asset, but he hasn't. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of, like, self-awareness or anything. But the other phrase that has come up a lot is, he's not a serious person. And I think fans pick up on that, that he doesn't come across as a serious person. And I think that's more of an indictment if you want to be a top star centerpiece act. And you bring up the example of that sports-like setting with New Japan. He can come across as a serious person. Well, where is that? You're going after the tag team titles. And, you know, it didn't start out that bad. I mean, the whole thing of him kind of, like, leaning on the top rope and just talking. I mean, it's not great, but, like, I'm like, oh, maybe – you know, maybe this is going to be serious about, you know, building up, you know, Jericho and the dynamic with him. And he's going to kind of get into the layers of why he's teaming with him, despite everybody saying he shouldn't.
And why is he? It's like, he's like, yeah, I know he might turn on me. And it's like, well, you have other people that could be your partner. Like, where, I know I've watched most of AEW the last few months, but not everything. And I'm like, what am I missing? And why are you, now you have a title shot. I get that. The Young Bucks said they could beat you easy, and so you're in this situation, but I don't know. Like, you didn't – that still seemed a little arbitrary. And wait, I'm sorry I interrupted you there, but I'm sitting there. I'm trying to think, how can this be part of, like, a meta big plan? Like, I'm the dummy. I'm not seeing it. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And by the end of that, I'm like, no, I just don't think – he's that invested in this entire thing.
Yeah. We think that too much, and it, you know, the benefit of the doubt goes away after a while. You know, when you're like, well, maybe I just don't get it, or maybe I need to watch Rampage, or maybe I need to do some research on Being the Elite or on Twitter, or maybe I'm just not paying close enough attention and it's over my head and it's for a different generation or a different type of fan. No, it just, sometimes it's just not good and it doesn't make sense. And hopefully the whole Devil Mystery storyline, which we'll get into soon here, is better. But with Kenny, you, like, the comment that he said, well, I get jumped all the time. Oh, well, great. You've just extinguished. Because he was just flipping about it. Like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, so now when people jump you, we don't care. Yeah, the heat's gone. It's like, well, oh, yeah, it'll be done. Well, MJF just got jumped. That's a huge story. The end of the show that you're the EVP for is going to end with a beatdown. Hangman's going to get jumped. And Kenny's out there, couldn't care less, couldn't be any less aware of how to stay focused on what matters and not extinguish something that you're actually doing later on that show when you're in the midst of doing a storyline on. And it's like, I get jumped, big deal. Well, it should be a big deal, because the reason heels jump baby faces is to get fans worked up. Kenny doesn't care. He's like, Jericho might turn on me, whatever. Like, it's like his brain can have great matches. Like, he can put together great matches, but, you know, and I've been an advocate for him to, you know, getting reps on the microphone, but, like, you've got to, like, go over stuff behind the scenes. This isn't – there were, you know, I don't know. I mean, in other eras, there were bad promos and there were good promos. You know, I mean, there were. And Lance Russell carried a lot of people on Memphis, mm-hmm. Memphis Wrestling through bad promos. And so did a lot of other interviewers. Mark Lawrence and Bill Mercer had to try to carry the Von Erichs through a lot of bad promos back in the day to be a little more topical tonight. But you can get better. And like you said, a serious Kenny has been spotted at a table with a microphone in front of him. Where is the leadership in AEW going, Kenny, you're great. I'm going to butter you up for 2 minutes here. Here's all the things that I appreciate that you're great at. But you're not great at being a centerpiece star on a weekly cable series. You're not. Do you want to be? Do you understand what I'm saying? Are you thinking of a video game? Are your eyes glazed over? Or can we actually try to have you contribute to AEW's growth? I don't know if that kind of talk has ever happened. It sounds patronizing. But you know what? You put in a performance like this in basically 4 years of history, you kind of deserve it. And
well,
no one said that to him.
When he needs something, like when he was a champion with Don, I would argue that he was compelling, and he would occasionally really dress up. So it's not that he can't do it, and it's not that he hasn't even done it in AEW, Wade. It's that, like I said, he looked to me like he just didn't care.
I know.
I mean, like, and it's like, then get off my TV, man. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm a huge fan, but I'm, you know, if I showed up and, like I said, if I show up to teach my class and I'm sitting there in sweatpants and I haven't prepared and I'm just half-assing everything, you know, I'm not going to be in my job very long. And I know he's got more security than I do, I guess. But
I don't think Kenny is like spends money faster than he gets it. So. You know, I think there is a little bit, and Vince McMahon, you know, I was like, oh, you get a downside, but we need to have incentives. It's human nature. And then WCW gave out guaranteed contracts, and it was a big controversy during the Nitro years. Are those guaranteed contracts leading to insubordination and a sense of, well, I'll show up and do the bare minimum. I get paid the same either way, and I'm going to bury other talent? Because the incentive in WCW was make sure no one else gets over so that when your contract is coming due, you're needed. And in WWE, with the downside and the incentives, the idea was I need to help create new stars so I have fresh opponents so that I can draw big pay-per-view buy rates and house show attendance so I get bigger bonuses. And Vince was right as far as that went. It's sad, but it's, you know, true. If there's a lot of people who go to work every day and like their jobs, but if you hand them $10 million, they're quitting the next day and they're going to go do their hobbies. And AEW is full of people who are kind of doing their hobbies. Instead of trying to help AEW grow and be successful, and some of them I don't even think know because they haven't been in WWE, or you don't have to be in WWE to know how to be professional. But WWE runs a different type of ship, and they have more often than not over the years demanded more of their talent with incentives than other companies have, either because, well, for all kinds of reasons. So anyway, yeah, the leadership isn't there with Tony Khan to go to, because I think Tony likes good wrestling matches. That's all you hear, you know, the ROH press conference this week. Oh, it's a great lineup. There's going to be a lot of good matches. Well, right, but are there good stories? Do the titles matter? Why are AEW wrestlers on an ROH pay-per-view? I mean, there's no context. It's not Tony Khan's strength. And this company needs somebody who can walk in and look Kenny in the eye, and others, by the way, it's not all Kenny, and go, we got to up our game. We're stagnant. We're drawing 3,300, 3,500 people on a nationally televised Dynamite with a theme that I don't think they mentioned. With a continental classic tournament, and Von Erich's making appearances. Well, I don't know if they did in front of the crowd. Maybe we'll find out soon.
Well, aren't they taping Rampage though tonight? Or so then they would be.
Oh, true.
Be on Rampage. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, two of them. Yeah.
And they have a history of, you know, they've drawn for MLW. I mean, you got to think a few of those people were there to see the Von Erichs.
I know. So if you're in the Dallas market drawing 3,500 people, you know, four plus years in, I mean, why not like take some inventory and go, maybe we can get more out of our top people who I think are satisfied being richer than they ever imagined with big contracts playing WWE against AEW. And the structure's just not there to incentivize them to get better. And and we see segments like that. And Jericho knows that's crap. He knew that. You look at his body language, he knew they were dying out there. And I don't know that he cares that much anymore.
I don't know. Because I felt like I was – and, again, I'm taking notes. I'm trying to – you know, I even skipped the SEC Missouri football for next season schedule reveal. We're going to go like 11-1 next year. Probably we're going to have another great year, but that's beside the point. But they, I didn't even watch that.
You've crossed into the zone of too much college football talk for me, Dan.
Well, we're 10-2 this year, and we're in the top 10. So anyway,
you know me.
And we haven't had this kind of season for 10 years, Wade. So I have to just bring it up occasionally so people have to hear it on the podcast, and they're like, "Oh, Missouri's that good? Yeah, we're gonna beat Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl too." But anyway, now I'm losing my train of thought. I'm sorry. Darn it, I get so excited. But yeah, I felt like Jericho. You know, he came out like he needed this baby face thing because he really did a lot for Will Hobbs, I think. But that, you know, I don't know, like he's kind of refocusing on this, and it, and I felt like it was getting some momentum, but yeah, he sensed it was done. I mean, I think during the segment, he got kind of like over it.
Not happy when his segment starts. Like he cares,
right?
But I also think he's been part of WWE. He sees the flaws in how AEW's operated, and he tried to, I think even though he and Punk aren't best pals, I think they've had similar frustrations. Jericho's just dealt with it differently than Punk did.
Yeah. No, I think he threw his hands up during the thing. And wait, I mean, people that listen to me, like I want AEW to be great so badly.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. Like I want to see a different presentation. I do not watch that much WWE. It's just not really my thing. And I hope that doesn't disqualify me from doing well on this show. I tune in from time to time. I watched some of the CM Punk stuff. I kind of gave it a chance, and I was kind of disappointed with the Monday Night Raw. It just, their presentation is too antiseptic to me for my personal taste, generally speaking.
Yeah, yeah, I get that.
You know, what I want out of this product is really something different, but something super, super compelling. And parts of it are, I like the general tournament, but I mean, my frustrations are so huge again with Kenny, because I know he can do better. I don't think he's incapable.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I mean, I was thinking, what does the word incapable mean? Because yes, technically he's capable, but under these circumstances, do I have any confidence he's going to change?
Get better. No, yeah, that's, somebody needs to kick him in the butt. I mean, it's like, but
all people do is tell him how great he is. I mean, now how many wrestling media entities are there just telling him how great he is, not holding him accountable in any way? Because when you have the body of work he does, then you're beyond criticism. But obviously, you know, and I was excited about the Don Callis, Kenny Omega. It's like, this is, you know, Bockwinkle Heenan possibilities, you know, in terms of that dynamic of sort of two different personalities, and there, you know, there's a connection there with them and a history. It's just, and they didn't really go all in on it. And again, that came down to just not seeming to care enough. And I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, but to me, this is a low, excuse me. This is like a real bottom. Like this is different to me than the other stuff that he's been kind of halfway in. I mean, like I, and maybe I'm just victim of the moment, but boy, I thought it was just so bad.
Yeah. By the way, Ricky Starks, very charismatic, very talented on the mic. He's oftentimes part of bad segments. The Adam Copeland one was bad. I think there's things that promos Ricky Starks can wing. He can wing it. But there's other things he shouldn't. You know, I think that some of the material they need to, you know, like there are just things he and Copeland said to each other were counterproductive. They tore each other down, and I think Copeland got pissed off about it. And I think, there's some bad judgment. I know Todd Martin had strong feelings on it, and I did too at the time. So we talked about that. Tonight, one thing, and this is like a critique wrapped in a compliment, Ricky Starks at the end sort of saved that promo, but he also turned himself babyface again. Because the crowd was like, what is going on here? And this isn't good. And then Ricky's like he's doing his thing on the microphone, and people are like, that's why we like wrestling. You know, that's why we like promos. What Ricky's doing there, more of that, not what Kenny and Jericho are doing. And the crowd started cheering him. It's like, you can't be a heel doing that if your baby faces can't. Like, it sounds, he shouldn't have to like tank it, but don't hit a babyface crescendo in your promos, because your goal is to get booed. I say this in part because of the pattern where Big Bill, Ricky often talks about Big Bill overcoming addiction. And every time he does it, I'm like, what is that? What purpose is that serving?
Right.
I know there's people in the crowd and, you know, here on social media, oh, it's so great, Bill, to hear your story, your inspiration to us all. That's not what Big Bill's getting paid to do. He's not getting paid to inspire people. He's getting paid to be a heel who gets booed. You should curate what you put on the air as your character for things that serve your role on the roster. And congratulations. I mean, it's great, but it just shouldn't be brought up on television until he's a babyface. So I just don't think there's always the best judgment or the best wisdom or the best kind of calls on the fly that are made by a lot of things that go on in AEW. And it's a lack of leadership and direction and guys just kind of out there, men and women out there, just going into business for themselves without being steered by veterans who kind of, you know, veteran voices who can go, hey, you know, respectfully just say, you know, see what happened here. I mean, in an NBA game, there's a rookie point guard. He makes a mistake and the coach goes respectfully, hey, you're super talented, but here's why you don't make that pass. Don't leave your feet before you know who you're throwing it to.
Right.
You need more people like that. Otherwise, it's shows like this happen or segments like that happen, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to give them a pass because, like I said, I think they were trying to just say that. I mean, honestly. But because you could see he was like – it wasn't going the way that Ricky Starks thought things were going to go. I mean,
right.
And he's trying to think on the fly. And, yeah, it was a really bad segment. I think we probably established
that. We got it. Yep. Cool. All right. We've got a lot of people who have called up. No one's pushed one yet. So if you're shy or hesitant or just thought we had a long line of callers, this isn't the type of – well, I don't know. I guess maybe I should have expected callers just complaining about the Kenny Jericho segment, but people emailed on that instead. So feel free to push one. If you're streaming our show otherwise and want to call in, you're invited to 347-215-8558. What other segment did I note? Oh, the devil thing. Okay, so we have Joe at the top of the hour, and then we have Hangman Page getting attacked in the parking lot at the end. So we kind of bookended segments there and a tease of, oh, could that be MJF? Because it's the mask MJF war.
Sure.
Dan, what do you think of this storyline? I talked about trust in booking. I know that, you know, mystery angles are fun, and people enjoy delving into them. Do you think viewers should trust that AEW is going to have a satisfying ending to all this?
Boy, that's the million-dollar question, Wade. I think it was you and Rich talked about this about a week ago. And, I mean, I'm getting some Black Scorpion vibes. I'm not going to lie. And I lived through that thing. And I went to that Starcade where Ric Flair turned out to be the Black Scorpion. I hope so. Mm-hmm. I know that's a cop-out answer.
Yeah.
I really hope they have something great in mind. To me, I think it's not Jack Perry. I don't know. So I can't figure it out where it would be so great. And like you said, I think earlier, maybe they've changed direction a few times. I thought Samoa Joe is so great. Talk about somebody that takes his interviews and character seriously, because
mm-hmm.
he might look a little foolish just assuming it's Hangman because of the beer bottle, but the way he put it across, it was still like, it was still okay. Like, it was like, I'm angry and I don't really trust you anyway. And here is this evidence. And then I will say this. I thought that whole segment was really good because I feel like Hangman is coming around. Like, he's somebody that's starting to get more bought in and become more compelling. And he's responding the way somebody that would be so frustrated about not being able to beat Swerve in the Texas Death Match would respond. Like, both he and Swerve, I think, have benefited from that match. And so that segment I really liked. And I liked the opening segment build. And I'm like watching it at the end and I'm like, Wade's going to ask me who the devil is. And I just don't know. I've heard people speculate, and it all kind of makes sense to me, but yeah, maybe we can get a caller to speculate and I can bounce off that, or you can throw some ideas out because I'm at a loss. And I just hope they're not at a loss. I guess I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, I want to you know, we've been critical of Continental Classic, critical of Kenny Omega, even critical of Ricky Starks being too charismatic and not reining it in when he's supposed to be a heel, and critical of Big Bill overcoming addiction. just mentioning it is my issue, not him overcoming it. So a positive thing is I even with Rich on the flagship yesterday, we talked about Hangman Page, and we talked about how Hangman and CM Punk had an issue in AEW, and they didn't make money off on that real-life issue. And Seth Rollins and CM Punk have real-life issues, and they're going to make money on it because Seth wants to be a top guy. He wants to draw money, and he sees a Punk feud based on, you know, based on real-life tensions and feelings. He knows that, and I'm going to talk to people in WWE about this. You know, Seth is more willing to work with Punk than otherwise because Punk, he is smart enough to realize, can get him to a top match at a WrestleMania. And Seth, as I talked with Rich about yesterday, has a personal rivalry with Roman Reigns in a way, kind of like Bret and Shawn. And I mean, we could list all the different people over the years who have had, you know, rivalries trying to outdo, you know, Christian and Edge even did. That's one of the reasons Christian went to TNA, you know, is this because, and we just put up an 18 years ago Wade Keller hotline on the VIP feed last month on this, or a couple weeks ago. And I reported about it, how there's a phone conversation and Christian wanted to move up from coach to business or from business to first class, whatever it was. And Vince said, that's reserved for top guys. And you're not that, you know, I mean, so there's a rivalry. Well, Edge is seen as a top guy. I'm not, I'm going to go prove myself somewhere else. Okay. So it's not unusual, but Seth is responding in a way that helps companies draw money, helps him make money and satisfies the fans and puts aside personal issues. Hangman didn't. And so I was hard on Hangman with Rich yesterday going, it doesn't seem like he cares that much. Kind of the Kenny theme, the Bucks theme. Oh, we got a ton of money and this company doesn't ask anything more of us, so we're just going to kind of do a baseline amount. Tonight was a step up for him. This is what I want to see. First time in a long time.
Yeah.
He's so good on the microphone, and he'd be better if he was doing this every week. You know, I mean, like, he has glimpses of greatness on the microphone, and he's had bad storylines with Dark Order and walking around with alcohol and being all, you know, the sad cowboy and all that. If he was doing this every week for 4 years, he'd be one of the best promos in wrestling, and people would be tuning in to see him cut a promo this week. We got a window to that, and then he goes out and has a really good match. He felt fully engaged and invested, and it was like, did he hear what I said yesterday? Like, is he stepping up? It was like, wow, this is what you look for. And you're nodding along, I can tell verbally. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. It was a great night for Hangman, start to finish. And, it's just – I agree that his attitude probably with Punk wasn't what it should have been, but also you're well aware and you've said, I mean, Punk is in a different place too. Like, he can't just stomp his feet and say, well, this guy said something about me and I'm not, I mean, he's got to be all business now. And in AEW, he would be business with the people he was okay being business with. I mean, Yeah, that's a two-way street. I mean, I think you got to be – Hangman didn't do great, but that was not all on him either.
Oh, no.
There's
no innocent parties, but it's not all one party. You know, it's not even 90-10.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But you know, and of course, again, what's just – Samoa Joe can work with anybody and bring out the best in anybody. And, you know, Hangman, like, it was very just compelling. Both ways, guys in their character that are compelling, that you want to see, you know, wrestle for world championships. And this was a big step toward getting Hangman back into that picture, which he should be in. There's just this underlying believability that he is so frustrated that this guy broke into his house and he lost to him, but he really, you know, that's kind of been put to the side and he can't deal with it because Swerve's in the Continental Classic and he's going to get himself back and build himself up and, you know, do his cowboy stuff. And that was promising. Like, the show was a good show. I mean, we've talked a lot about the bad parts of it, but I don't think any of the matches were particularly bad. I mean, the Jay Lethal match quickly and there wasn't that much to it, but even that kind of told a story and I think that was fine. So
this show was good in ways that the first six Dynamites were good. Like, you want growth. What you're good at might be enough in a lot of jobs, but when attendance is down, and I know that Wembley's great, and that's a confidence boost, no question about it. And, you know, buy rates are holding up pretty well, and who knows what's going on with the next TV deal. But it'd be nice to be better positioned for the next TV deal with growing viewership, not declining viewership, growing attendance, not declining attendance. And I know, you know, fewer people are subscribing to cable, and that's a factor, and Tony's mentioned that before, but not to this degree, you know. And so I want to see them get better at the things that have been weaknesses for 4 years and not have the crutch be, oh, but good wrestling. Good wrestling is enough for a lot of people, and it makes shows like this, like you said, enjoyable. I watched this show, and I enjoyed watching it. But it's not the type of show that's going to grow their audience. That's the problem. They've got the people who like this, but they need Kenny to step up. In you know, that's the type of thing that they need. They need the devil storyline to make sense and be well told. There's things that they just aren't polished at that they need to put more attention to, but you never get a sense that Tony Khan has, you know, outwardly introspective moments with the media or fans going, yeah, I know we got some work to do, and here's what we're doing to fix, you know, to improve some other areas. It just seems like, you know, it, as long as there's good wrestling and these people have reputations in wrestling media for being great wrestlers in Japan or PWG or the indie circuit or ROH, then that's our audience. We're just going to market those wrestlers and lean on their past. And yeah, it's not enough. It's not enough.
I want to push back just like very slightly, because I don't want to overly push back, because I agree with your general comment. I do, and again, like the kind of cop out at the end is a little frustrating about the Continental Classic. It's only one data point, but they did hold up really well Saturday night against pretty tough competition. And so that, at least I think that this Continental Classic is giving people more of a reason to watch than just, I'm going to see a good match. There are people out there that are saying, I'm going to see a good match that is part of a bigger story that I'm somewhat intrigued by. And so that is a step in the right direction. You can't do that 50 weeks a year, but, you know, I want to tip my hat a little bit for that, because I think it has helped shore their television audience just to some degree.
Yes, and you have an opportunity when you do something like Continental Classic that's going to bring some people to make destination viewing because they're into it, and you want to do other things well to hook them beyond that. And my only pushback would be, you know, in October, before the Continental Classic started, Collision had 518,000 and 472,000. In the last 2 weeks, Collision's drawn 451 and 455. College football was going on in October, and yeah, they're down from that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, but they got bumped a few weeks and lost the momentum. But go ahead, yeah.
Well, I'm going to really show my ignorance, but wasn't there an NXT show or something Saturday night? Like, WWE had something, didn't they?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah, they want to get.
That's what I'm saying. The fact that they haven't held up at all against any WWE very well.
Yeah,
and so that was my point.
That's definitely a pertinent point to add. I don't think it was the hottest deadline we've heard. I don't think I got a press release touting the viewership on Peacock for this deadline. Episode. It wasn't a red hot takeover type special. So, you know, but. Still, it's a pertinent point. I want to say
the last time they went up against NXT, they still got pretty bad number. That was my comparison.
Yep. Cool. All right. Well, let's go to Mike in Hershey, Pennsylvania, giving us a call here. Mike, welcome. What are your thoughts on Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade. Good to talk to you again. You know, honestly, just listening in, trying to figure out this devil storyline, had a few thoughts.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, what you guys are saying is exactly what I'm thinking. I mean, I think if we really look at this, and because I'm convinced at this point that there's just that really there's sort of an open-ended situation here, and I think they're trying to figure it out on the fly. I mean, maybe they've got it figured out, and they're kind of writing in reverse. But you know, my opinion is, the devil storyline was probably going to be a couple of weeks. You know, it was probably going to be Adam Cole. It would have made sense at the time. Gout, you've got the injury. You've got Tony Khan who is enamored with Cole. He wants him to be a big star. You know, he's not there to fill this role. And now what? You know, we extend it. I think I think the biggest thing, I think, I've mentioned this before, I've heard people mention it before too, is that we expected something at full gear, that was sort of one of the reasons to buy that pay-per-view, is maybe for some closure to this, or for some sort of reveal, big clue, whatever it was going to be to lead us to the next step. And nothing came. It was absolutely nothing. So then ever since then, it's just been, these strange twists. We've got this long list of, whodunit, a number of characters, and none of them really make any sense. I mean, they all make a little bit of sense, but are any of them really satisfying? And I think that's where I'm at right now. So what I'm thinking, this Hangman stuff kind of comes out of nowhere. They're kind of trying to, I don't know if they pulled straws backstage and says, who wants to be the devil? But maybe Hangman said, with the beer bottle, and now the follow-up with that. And actually, I thought that was sort of one of those deals where, a keen viewer, you don't have to be that keen of a viewer to pick it out last week. But when they're actually bringing attention to it and saying, now it's almost like, okay, we're bringing attention to this so that everybody, kind of knows. I don't know. So here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking they've switched. It's not going to be Adam Cole. I think Tony Khan pays too much attention to the spoilers and people who think they've figured him out, and it's not Britt Baker, because that would be disappointing at this point. Hangman, they're trying to lead us to believe that there's no way it could possibly be Hangman, and then so it's probably going to be Hangman. Or I'm just putting this out there, guys. Maybe this is wild and crazy. Could it be I almost feel foolish saying this, but like, I'm just putting it out there, because could it be someone like Dolph Ziggler, someone who was recently released?
Yes, it could like be, that, Mike. It could be, Mike. I sure hope it isn't, but yes, that is a possibility.
I mean, and I haven't heard anyone say that. I haven't really heard anybody say that, but I'm just trying to put together, who's out there. I mean, at this point, I don't think it would be. Here's the other thing too, and I know CM Punk is great. I love CM Punk, but I'm also kind of tired of hearing about CM Punk. Meaning every call and every topic of every show, I get it. But I think there was probably a last ditch effort where when it didn't work out, there was a lot of excitement, a lot of speculation that was this whole CM Punk thing, really kind of a work, and could he end up being the devil? And I think that would have been so awesome. And obviously that's not happening. So again, was that plan B? Was that plan C? Was that ever even real? Was that just in our, in our heads, in our fantasy? But the other idea, and this is, again, it's out there, but I'm trying to think of anything that would be, shocking, anything that would be worth it at this point. Maybe Ziggler's not as big of a star, but it would be, it would be shocking. I mean, is there any possibility, guys, with this timeline, that it could be even Adam Copeland? I mean, I don't know. That would be shocking. No, I don't think anybody would see that coming, because he's been nowhere near this storyline. I don't know if there's any point. So, guys, I'm throwing a couple of weird names out there like that.
Yeah.
But besides the ones that, everybody's looking at and the red herrings we've seen, just trying to think of anything at this point that would be kind of worth the reveal. So let you guys go and hear what you have to say.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah. Ziggler is just groan inducing, and it would be, it would be very like, TNA, like, oh, somebody who is a mid-carder who with a losing record on the other show, but it's the number one company. Let's bring him in and give him a huge push and be the centerpiece of a big storyline. Like, no, they shouldn't do that. I don't think they will. I don't think it'll be Copeland, because it is just so out of left field, and it would feel like a late decision, because Copeland is sort of ice cold as a character, and we the other things people have figured out, or we got derailed or feel stale by now because it's taken us so long to get there. So, I mean, I wouldn't rule out that they might not try to reconfigure things and calibrate things and go, can this make sense if we do it? But I'm still leaning towards Britt and Adam Cole, just as a diabolical couple who have orchestrated this, and that there's, Todd brought it up, asked me about it. And I was like, well, there can be two devils, the one who's been more physical and one who's been kind of orchestrating it. and, you know, Tony Schiavone going, it's an inside job, would sort of explain, you know, Britt Baker having connections as an AEW original. And, you know, she might have a friend in production who's been helping with this. And then there's the Schiavone-Britt connection. Was that a clue, or are we reading too much into it? I know I've gotten some emails with people saying there's dots to connect that it's Britt. I'm not ruling out it's Britt. I hope Tony would not change plans because people have started to figure it out online. That would be a really, really, really dumb decision. Do you know, oh, people figured it out, so therefore it invalidates it being the right thing to do. So anyway, Dan, your additional.
Yeah, point. Well, okay, so technically Adam Copeland is too tall to be the devil, I think. But
that's true, yeah.
If you're making a choice between him and Dolph Ziggler, I don't care how bad the story makes sense with Adam Copeland, go with Adam Copeland. Like, do not do Dolph Ziggler. It's exactly the TNA-esque thing that you're talking about. And I've always been with you. I've been okay with the whole idea of it being Britt and Adam Cole. And it does make some sense. And the fact that she hasn't been on TV and she's been so vocal about it, there's clues there that are logical. Like, if you pay attention, it actually does make some sense. And I would be perfectly fine with that. There is the part of me, again, that has that Black Scorpion fear that's like they're just running in place until December 30th or whenever the pay-per-view is, and then they're going to kind of figure it out. And that's, you know, that's what they would do in the old Black Scorpion thing, that they would, you know, throw out these random clues, and then they really didn't mean anything because they didn't know what they were doing, and they had to come to a conclusion at some point. They wanted you to think it was the Ultimate Warrior, but I've always kind of been okay with the idea of Britt being in there, and I know a lot of people have pushed back about it, but, you know, I mean, that's always a problem with a mystery. You build it up in your mind where it's going to be the most incredible thing ever, and reality is always is going to be tough to live up to people's imagination.
Yep. All right, let's go to Greg, and this is so appropriate, Dan. Greg from Waterloo, Iowa, when you're co-host, Dan. Greg, welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, I got a few thoughts on things that have already been discussed, and we'll just get into it. But, you know, I felt that when this tournament was announced that it was going to be – the programming through the end of the year was going to be well-received because the tournament allows for great wrestlers to go out and have long-form, strong wrestling matches. And you saw quite a bit of that tonight. And so I've been of the opinion that, like, TV is going to, at least for the most part, be well received by the core of the AEW audience that tunes in primarily for strong in-ring for good wrestling. But on the other hand, I will say then it comes to the whole, you know, side of, like, the whole storytelling side of things. And do they earn our trust with, like, to pay off well with this whole devil thing and everything? That's where I'm a little more skeptical. So I'm intrigued to see where the television is at the beginning of the year when there won't be this Continental Classic and you have to go back to more traditional week-by-week storytelling. But, you know, what have we had so far? We had the last pay-per-view, which was potentially people thinking maybe this is a tease for this whole devil thing to be revealed potentially with the way, you know, Max getting attacked at the early in the show and probably not going to wrestle. But then it's just ends up, instead of like there being some type of like big storyline advancement, it's Max doing AEW's version of Super Cena and overcoming Jay White with all this, you know, the way that, you know, the whole overcoming the injuries and overcoming the odds and beating the strong challenger and probably his least well-received title defense so far. So, you know, there really hasn't been an earning of a benefit of the doubt. So I feel like there has to be a good payoff to this. And with the way things are going, like, it could go either way, but it's not guaranteed that this is going to be like a satisfying, fulfilling conclusion. And I think that there's potentially a lot riding into going into like future momentum for the company based on how this is perceived and the response to this. And as you've talked about, like, you know, I don't think that storytelling or maybe the more quote unquote sports entertainment side of the industry, that I think there is a happy medium balance needed between good in-ring wrestling and then, you know, strong storytelling that somewhat goes into some of the things that WWE thrives on. Not fully, but to some extent. And that is not the strongest suit of AEW. So I think that there's a lot riding on this. And there's a very good chance it may not pay off the way people think it does. But I guess my point is here is that it's a bit of a mixed bag right now because the in-ring the matches guarantee that the shows are going to be pretty well received, I think, for the most part. But also then it becomes the question of the traditional storytelling. So we'll get back to that with the reveal of this whole thing. And then once we get into 2024, what's the television going to be like in the aftermath, probably, of the revealing of this and everything. So, you know, just something to think about there. And I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan, do you want to reply to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think Greg's certainly right. I mean, the way this they've put enough into this that the way it's received and what people think about it is going to be a big impact on the ratings over the next 3 to 6 months as they're trying to negotiate a television deal. And again, I really do enjoy this tournament, and I would argue, I'm not saying anyone's arguing the other way, but I think the I forget the colors, but the Saturday division, I think that's the blue or gold, whatever. I find Bryan Danielson's story more compelling and Eddie Kingston's story more compelling than anything in this other division. And, I'll be watching Saturday. I'll at least make sure to watch those tournament matches because they are building somewhere there. And I really think they're telling a good story with Eddie Kingston. I hope it comes to the conclusion that I think it might. And that is a nice couple months crutch, whatever you want to call it, to help build ratings. And then the key is not just what you said, not just doing that, but then coming out of it with momentum and something that people are going to want to continue to see. Because you're going to have NFL on Saturday nights here, even with playoffs and stuff, I think, in January. So it's not going to be easy.
Yeah. I want this to be a payoff that restores may be the wrong word broadly, but that establishes confidence in AEW doing, as people call it, the sports entertainment-y side of things. Because the tournament has been is really good matches with the announced, this is Excalibur's comfort zone. Tony Schiavone stepped up on commentary lately. Taz is so good.
Taz is fantastic.
I know.
I have a couple comments I wrote tonight. Like when he was talking about Jay Lethal having pride and how you're in that locker room and you can't face everybody if you just keep losing in this thing and you're not going to
yep.
cash in just because you're 0-3 because you're embarrassed. Like, I'm like, that's sports. That's what people, I want. Like I'm sitting there just like, man, like, yeah, like everything you're saying is so great. And I can never be completely praiseful of Excalibur. Like I'm glad that he brought up the tiebreaker being head-to-head competition, but he's like, and as we've told you many times, the tiebreaker is like, you never said, I've watched this show. Maybe I haven't seen every Friday Night Rampage or whatever, but I'm watching AEW, and this is the first time you've clued us in on the tiebreaker. Don't make your audience feel dumb. Don't tell them that of course this is the tiebreaker. Well, it's news to me, and I'm paying more attention than 90% of your audience at least. So give me something here, man. I don't know. Excalibur's doing better, but that one rubbed my nerve a little bit. I got annoyed by that. I liked comment A, and then he followed it up with of course, and I was like, nah, man, not of course. Come on.
I'm just glad they're giving us the details on how the tournament works, but it would be nice if it wasn't a slow rollout of how it works.
Yeah. Well, then later, Tony or something is like, well, he wants Moxley to win. Jay White wants Moxley to win. He's like, no, actually, he wants Swerve to win, which I think if you piece it out makes sense. But you can't just say that and then assume the audience is like following all these machinations and knows what you're talking about. But, sometimes he gets cut off and he doesn't always get back to his point that he wanted to make. But he's been better in this. I will give credit where it's due, but there's just a couple pet peeves I have with what he says also.
I think Tony is putting on shows that are going to get praised for the reasons Greg brought up. That's going to, and he's going to be happy enough with the numbers. And it's not phoning in booking. Like, I don't think that's fair. This hasn't been phoned in, but it has gone according to script. You know, in terms of, oh, yeah, you know, Jay Lethal and Danny. Like, the people you expect to lose are losing. Mark Briscoe hasn't won. We're going to have non-clean finishes, but we're going to frame it as if it's cleaner because it's not people outside the ring doing it. So there's been some disappointments, but it has been good wrestling. I think the announcing has been more good than bad in terms of rising to the occasion for this across the board. And the wrestlers, and, you know, I mean, I think the attitude in the locker room is among the people in this tournament, it's people who want to wrestle each other for the most part and want to put in the work. And they are going out there, and you can tell they're putting a lot more time into their matches than Kenny Omega's putting into his promos. And it's showing, you know. So it's been enjoyable television, and I wouldn't want to watch random round-robin tournament matches 52 weeks a year at a wrestling company. But for 5 weeks, it's really compelling. It feels different. And, you know, they've done enough well, even with the stakes being kind of annoying. we're going to merge three championships, one that we created and two that, you know, people don't, and watching AEW aren't necessarily invested in, whatever. The matches are good and there's drama and, you know,
well,
and
the wrestlers treat it like it has consequence too. So that's a big part of it. And they're not meaningless titles. I mean, ROH title, they've kind of, you know, but I agree with your general point. I'll say this too. Like, this is not, obviously it's not G1. Like, blocks of 8 or blocks of 10 are so much, of course, they don't have TV time for that. But you are a little limited in the stories you can tell with only 5 matches. Yep. Whereas if you open it up to 7 matches, there's much more nuanced stories that you can tell. So to some degree, the designated jobber thing, I could excuse it to a certain degree because they want really compelling stuff at the end amongst certain guys, and you almost have to have – there's just less room for wins and losses with only 5 matches, I guess, mathematically. And so it's a little bit limiting, and that is, I think, part of the reason they're doing what they're doing. I agree with your point, but that is, and I think though, like, it would be okay to have a clear first place winner and just have guys fighting it out for second, in which case you wouldn't have to have quite as many designated jobs in the matches, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, let me throw back to Greg. Any follow-up or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah. I look at it this way, every 10 to 15 extra minutes that go towards the tournament will not be devoted to things like, you know, CJ Perry and Miro rehashing their WWE storyline that people hate.
Oh.
So, also, though, I will also add to it, my other thought is, I was surprised to see Jon Moxley beat Swerve Strickland, even if he did it by, you know, breaking the rule, he pulled his height. But what did you think of that decision? Because I was a bit, Swerve Strickland's clearly, like, he might be the hottest thing in the company right now. I mean, like, his name value and stock has gone up so high as of late. And so it's a bit of me thinking, like, you know, he probably should maybe be winning the main title and not the secondary title. But also there's a part of me that thinks that, like, you know, they really need to lose a lot. And so I wonder what you guys think of the decision of, like, the established star beating the guy who's really on pace to be the next major star in AEW, I think. And that was probably a little bit of a polarizing decision. I'm curious to see what your thoughts were on that.
This is what I wrote, and it wasn't a ton at the end of the show as I was prepping for the post show as usual, but I said, really good match. A bummer they did a flaky finish and hedged on giving viewers something more decisive. Swerve feels like a rising star, but this finish sort of sends a message that he's not necessarily on course to move up to the top tier. But this could be part of the story they're telling.
Exactly. You've got to let it play out, Greg. That's what I would say. Like, if he comes back and beats Moxley in the finals of the block, then it's better that he lost this match. So I think any of these kind of judgments have to be made at the end of the tournament, to be fair. And that's the same with G1. I keep coming back to that, but it's like, you know, you're not going to have very seldom are you going to have somebody roll through 5-0, and then they're going to win the final of the block. They're going to go 6-0, and they're going to just go 7-0. That's not the way these things work. And so I'd rather had Moxley beat him clean, like I said, if they're going to go that route. But there's room for Swerve to come back and win this whole thing. And there's also room for Jay White to come back and win this whole thing, which could happen. And Brian Danielson and Eddie Kingston. And that is, like, if you really study the brackets and you see all the permutations that could happen, it is pretty cool. Like, it's not G1, but it's moving in that direction. And so I would just say, just let's talk about this December 28th. And then, I think we can judge it fairly.
Greg, what do you think?
All right. No, that sounds good to me. And I don't think I have too much else to say, I don't think I have too much else to say. There's a lot to be said about, like, you know, ROH and the tie-in for Friday. But we'll leave that for another time. But thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, thanks for calling. All right, up next, our on-site correspondent, Dylan, is calling us.
Hey,
Dylan, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I've never done this before, so I'm sorry if I'm a little experienced at this, or inexperienced, I should say. But yeah, I was at the show, AEW show, I had a very good time. I enjoyed a lot of the matches. A lot of my favorite wrestlers were there, so it was a very cool experience. Crowd was hot pretty much throughout the duration of the show, and even in segments like the Jericho, Omega, tag title segment with Big Bill and Ricky Starks, which wasn't really my cup of tea. There was more positive reactions than I would have expected from that. But besides that, I really enjoyed that Mark Briscoe Jay White match. I thought that was my personal favorite match of the night. Mark has really made the most of these opportunities. It's kind of crazy to think about Warner not really letting the Briscoes be on AW television, barring quite literally a tragedy, and it's a shame that, you know, we didn't really get those opportunities with the Briscoes on national television. But I'm happy that Mark's really gotten these chances, and he's despite, you know, not being booked to win, he's produced, I think, some of the best matches out of the entire tournament. So that's really been my biggest takeaway with the entirety of the Continental Classic. Obviously, it's the very first year of them doing it. Establish some sort of prestige for a tournament like this in your very first year. And I think they've really tried to treat it like a big deal, and I think it's come across pretty well. And I think as years go on, if you continue to do this, it will be seen as this more important thing, and by having these super workers in the matches, it should help. So that's sort of been my takeaways as of late.
Yeah, good start, Dylan, for your observations on the show and what stood out. One of my questions I've got in mind is there was a moment after the bell rang in the Swerve Strickland John Moxley Dynamite main event where the crowd just started chanting holy shit and was really like they're treating this as a big deal. And I'm wondering if that was the peak moment of the show in terms of crowd reaction and just buzz in the building. And then part two and three, it seemed like they got a little bit confused at the smooching early in the match and just sort of sat there silently like, wait, what's going on here? And then part three of my question is, how did they react to the finish, and was it deflating? Did it deflate the crowd that Moxley won, or did they sort of seem like they expected it or were okay with it? So
I would add to that, Wade, was it pretty obvious that the shoulder was up to the people in the audience? I mean, I know you were not ringside, so I don't know. It was kind of a weird finish, and I'm curious if the live audience picked up on that.
Yeah, so I'll try to answer everything the best I can. I was sat in the 200 level on the not the hard cam side, the side where there obviously where people were sitting in the lower bowl. So I was sat one section above, and yeah, the Moxley main event with Swerve was definitely the loudest portion of the entirety of the show. There were some really hot moments as well throughout. The Joe Hangman stuff got pretty big reactions. There were some individual pretty large reactions, but that crowd was pretty much 50-50 for both those guys, but it was the loudest it had been for the entirety of the night. As far as the little smooch at the beginning there, I didn't really have a really great angle on that. And in the arena for at the University of Texas at Arlington, they have a pretty small kind of little jumbotron. So I didn't really catch that super well. I think it was just this kind of like in the moment kind of deal. I know Moxley has done that in some prior matches, and it's got a bit of a pop there. But I think the fans kind of just progressed with the rest of the match. I think the third question was about the finish. I thought if they were going to go to a draw, this would be the match that they were going to do it, just with how much Swerve has really rose up, not only in the perception of AEW, but probably just as in general with the booking, obviously coming out of that huge, huge match with Hangman at the latest pay-per-view. So I thought, you know, they've already built draws into the system of the tournament. I thought this could be the time to do it. Since Moxley, you're treating him as your final boss. You're treating him as the ace figure of the company. And if Tony is such a reader of the classics, if he just wants to be a huge giant Baba fan, then he can do what he did for numerous Champions Carnivals and do a whole bunch of draws for the entirety of the entire tournament if he really wanted to. So I honestly thought that could be an idea. Moxley getting the win got a big reaction. I think either way it was going to be a big reaction, but I don't think it was necessarily deflating. I think it was more surprising that Flash finished the roll-up was the way to get it done, though. So not necessarily deflating, just more surprising reaction from the crowd itself, though. I was sat up pretty high. It might have been different on the floor in the 100 level section. So,
did you get to see the Kevin Von Erich and Von Erich Sons promo? Was that something people noticed, or because of the small screen in the venue, it was hard to for fans to know what was going on?
No, it was aired. It was aired for the fans. The Von Erichs, I was there for the pre-show as well. The Von Erichs got huge reactions, so it was very nice to see the Von Erichs still being a huge presence here in Texas, obviously in the Dallas area. So, yeah, they definitely got their due. I didn't stay for the Rampage, unfortunately, but I can't say what, like, the reactions were for their participation in the match. But as far as the Von Erichs featured on television and just the prior rundown of the card to the show, they got some really big reactions from the crowd. So, definitely still Von Erich territory here in Dallas, especially probably with the announcement of the Iron Claw movie coming out pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Talk a little more about the match. They had a match or an appearance before Dynamite went on the air?
So before Dynamite went on the air, they just did like their little, like it was a pre-tape of the, like, running down the card with Tony Schiavone. Is like, he was still on television. It wasn't like an in-person thing. I think they've done this before on YouTube and stuff like that. But like the promotion of the Von Erichs, like the names on the screen garnered a pretty big live reaction for the crowd that was initially there.
Dan, let me throw to you four questions for the stranger.
Yeah, I'm acquainted with the caller for those that I'm sure wouldn't know that. I want to go back. I'm kind of curious. Again, for one, so as I mentioned earlier, the finish was kind of a weird finish in the main event. Like, Swerve's shoulder was pretty clearly up, and they acknowledged it on TV, but I'm assuming the live audience,
okay,
particularly where you were sitting, probably wasn't aware of that, because you would have been opposite of that shoulder. So, it sounds like that they didn't really – I don't know how they could have really made that obvious to the crowd in attendance, unless they happened to be sitting real close.
Yeah, there is no way whatsoever for me to see that at all. I wasn't looking for the screen to a replay. Even then, like, I don't know if I just missed this in person, but I didn't see some, like, massive complaints from Swerve Strickland to the referee about him getting screwed over. But, I don't know.
Yeah, he took
it
more
exactly
like he was shocked.
There.
Yeah. Yeah, he took it
because,
more like he was shocked. He was definitely upset, but yeah.
I thought that match was going to go on a little bit longer just because they had, you know, the 5-minute overrun. So I had that in mind that, okay, it's 9 o'clock right now. The match ended at like 9:01. I was like, we got 3 minutes left in the show. What the hell is going to happen here? Or excuse me. I didn't know what was going to happen in that ending there. So, I initially they obviously did the angle with the devil and stuff like that. As far as the crowd where I was, there wasn't much of a reaction to Swerve getting screwed over there. I couldn't really, the people watching over there, people weren't like being really upset about him losing. It was just general shock of that being the finish.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious how the women's match was received. It sounded like Riho she seems to get over really well with the live crowds. It seemed like she had a pretty good response in this match as well, or was it kind of muted?
Yeah, people really like Riho. People respond really well to Riho, and that seemed to be the case tonight. She's not, I wouldn't like necessarily say a special attraction, but just with how many times her and Shida do tours in Japan every so often and wherever else. Her coming back, it definitely makes it seem like I wouldn't know if I'd call it a bigger deal, but like these sort of limited offers, I'd say. So that helps. And yeah, Riho just, I guess, gets over pretty easily, just a fan favorite for the AW crowd. So yeah, the response was pretty decent for that match, though. I'd say the crowd was pretty warm, pretty hot crowd for the majority of the show.
And then the arena, like how you said you were on the side with the that was on camera. How would the building look if you were kind of trying to show the less full parts? I mean, what was it relative to capacity? I don't know too much about that particular building.
So just, I think reading online, I want to say in total, like the entirety of the arena is probably around 5,000 capacity. I think they were set up at most for about 4,000, and they had like over 3,300 the last time I checked. Pretty much most of the 200s where I could see were pretty empty. Where I was, there was not people. There were people like in my section, but people were like spread out and things like that. What I saw in the 100s were pretty filled up, beyond the hard cam side, and the floor was pretty filled up as well. So lower bowl looked good for TV, I'm sure. They didn't bring up the cameras for the 200 level, so.
Yeah, I thought, and Wade can jump in on this, I thought the way it looked on television was certainly professional, and you wouldn't know it wasn't reasonably full.
Well, I was worried because when they opened the show with just Samoa Joe coming out on the stage, they didn't do the usual pyro wide shot angle of the crowd where you're like, okay, I know why they've chosen this angle because they're hiding all the empty seats. They didn't even do that, which made me think, how bad is this? But then I didn't really think about it the rest of the show. And the crowd, it didn't feel like 3,500 people in a cavernous building. It felt like a red hot crowd crowd that was into the product, and the acoustics were better, so it felt more full. Mm-hmm. So it just ended up not really being an issue that I spent much time thinking about after the first 2 minutes of the show. And that's good. The only time I thought about it is, hey, this crowd's really reacting to the product, and it's a good crowd for AEW.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm sorry, everybody.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, the ceiling's pretty low in that building there, so it probably helps reverberate a lot of that crowd there. University of Texas Arlington is, I mean, they have a basketball. It's a basketball arena. It's not the biggest school in the world or anything, but they got a, as far as the crowd, like, less known on that, I think it was definitely like a market that's been successful for at least garnering an AW crowd in the past, DFW. I mean, they've ran a decent amount of events here Obviously, Final Battle last year comes to mind. They're doing Final Battle again this year here. Some other Dynamites in the past. So it's been consistent enough for them for them to be successful. I think Texas generally has been a strong wrestling market in general. I don't know about the other numbers for other companies, but as far as AEW, they've seemed to do decent enough here.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little more about the Kenny Omega, Jericho, Ricky Starks, Big Phil segment? And how
Dylan,
about it?
Dylan, I was hard on this segment. I think you were probably driving home after the show when we were doing the audio, but I was not a fan of this segment, and I think you know I try to be sympathetic to Mr. Omega, but I kind of let him have it tonight.
Yeah, the feeling's mutual on that one. It did not resonate with me very well. There's people that like that stuff that were in the live crowd, and they enjoyed it. I was not one of them, and the Jericho stuff especially just felt really, really bland. Like, they're bringing up Enzo Amore in 2023, which seems not only, like, forced, like, it got a pop in the crowd, but I'm like, are we kidding? Like, is this what we're going to for this big title feud? You're doing a guy who hasn't been, like, on television for good reason for a number of years. It felt disrespectful almost to me. I don't know. Nothing in that promo seemed meaningful, and it went on forever. And I guess Jericho, I don't know if he feels like the need to get his stuff in that time slot, but the fans, I mean, they were very big pop for his entrance, and they liked having him there. But man, it just felt like a complete waste of time, considering how long it went and how much content was, like, actually worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. My more theory was that Kenny was kind of checked out to the point where Jericho almost was panicking and trying to think on the fly, and it just didn't go well. And I agree. I think that the stuff bringing up Enzo is pretty disrespectful to Big Bill, who's, you know, gotten beyond that, at least in terms of his performance. And he's in a compelling team.
Yeah, I think back to that Big Bill promo he had on Collision maybe a couple weeks ago, where he talked about kind of overcoming demons and things like that. I don't know if that's familiar, but it felt like, wow, this guy's really, really not only put in the work to improve himself in the ring, but outside of it, and it's really paid off for him. Kind of rehashing that mark about him and, like, his prior work and his career just didn't feel right with me. As far as Kenny being checked out, I could definitely understand that and agree with that point there. You know, I don't really know what the deal is there. I'm not going to, like, try to, like, rumor about, like, oh, is Kenny really checked out? Does he not want to be here? Is he, like,
We did plenty of psychoanalysis earlier in the show. You can listen to that.
Dylan,
right.
I'm afraid. We beat that horse and then killed it a couple more times earlier. So, but it is a topic of a discussion for sure.
I do agree that it's, like, it's a warranted thing to bring up, because, like, you have a guy who's considered to be one of the best wrestlers in the world, and, like, one of your key guys, and this is what you have him doing right now, or this is what he, like, wants to do or doesn't really want to do, but he's just doing it just because he has to, I guess. I don't know. It felt like either he was bored or, like, he didn't want to be there. I kind of feel bad for Ricky Starks too, who was, like, trying to get a couple lines in, but you're dealing with, you know, there's nothing. You can't sell anything here because you're given nothing to work with, so it hurt everybody involved.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Wade, I want to ask you something, because I know that they kind of had a conclusion to this, but was this always the plan? Like, Takeshita is not around, it seems like, and maybe they were going to keep doing something. What happened there? Did he get hurt, or is just in Japan, or, like, that seemed to kind of I guess they wanted to move on to this tag team thing, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I don't know either. I wish they were better at following up on momentum when it seems like somebody, you know, captures the attention of AEW viewers, or just, you can just look and go, hey, this actually seems like we're onto something here. And let's not let that go by. You know, I mean, you know, Hobbs and Takeshita won on Rampage on Friday. I mean, so
okay, okay, I'd forgotten about that.
But it's Rampage.
Yeah. It's like, it just seemed like, and I guess they're probably not having him on the pay per view, so out of sight, out of mind. But that does seem like a little bit of a missed opportunity. I know Jericho beat Takeshita in DDT, and I think that's fine. Like, you know, that was probably very reasonable given the way the story has played out. But yeah, just, it seems like they want this tag thing to work so well, they've kind of dropped what might be a more compelling story that I don't know that it's run its course yet.
Go ahead, Dylan.
Oh yeah.
That
I
was
mean,
me, I think.
Oh, sorry. I thought Dylan was about to talk. Go ahead.
I wish Takeshita was on this show. I mean, he's great, but I agree with what you guys are saying. You got, I mean, he pinned Omega twice, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, like,
yeah, it just seems to.
If you have a guy beat like your top, like one of your top three stars in the company, and you have him back at square one, it's like an indictment on your booking process or something there. Something's not right. If you're doing like the right things, but you can't follow up on that, then yeah, I definitely agree.
Dylan, was there a match that in any way tested the patience of the audience because of how long it went or the people involved? Was there a dead point at all as far as in-ring action went?
That's a good question, and I kind of thought about that like myself. I'd say there was some parts of the Andrade Brody King match where things kind of seemed like they were meandering a little bit. The opening match with Hangman and Roderick Strong I thought was very good. But I also felt like it went long in a couple places. That's not like an indictment. It was worked very well. Roderick Strong's great. Hangman's excellent as always. And the crowd response between Brody and Andrade was great, especially just with the Texas crowd getting a lot of different. It was a 50-50 for pretty much for the Brody fans and Andrade fans. But I do feel like that Andrade Brody King match went on maybe a touch long. We could have been shortened up a little bit just with how long a lot has gone on in the matches so far. So yeah, that's maybe, I'd say that match is the only thing really. Obviously we talked about the Jericho promo, but besides that, I felt the matches were pretty appropriately lengthed out. The Rush match one is like,
yeah,
that was perfect amount of time. And then the Briscoe Jay White match, they get a lot done in like 10 minutes time, and I thought that was like perfectly timed. And yeah, so I think that only the second match and maybe a couple parts of the first match, but that's about it.
Dan, anything else you want to throw Dylan's way? Question wise.
No, just glad you enjoyed the show, bud. And you know, we'll try to get to watch wrestling together again at some point soon. The two of us joined Todd Martin at a New Japan show in Dallas back at the WrestleMania weekend. So all sorts of Torch connections being brought up tonight.
Dylan, anything Thanks, else you want to share before we let you go?
No, I'm good. Thank you guys very much for having me on. I'm sorry if this is the first time I ever called into something like this. So I hope I've enunciated everything.
You did great.
Right. So thank you for your time.
You have set a good standard for future first time callers, not to make anyone nervous. Thanks, Dylan.
Thanks, Dylan.
All right. Dan, let's wrap up with some topics here. Thankfully, an email that we haven't covered yet. We'll go back to Azan. He said, lately I've noticed a change in Orange Cassidy's character. He seems more arrogant in a way. Have you picked up on that, Dan? That didn't cross my mind. It doesn't mean there isn't something to it. Explore that a bit.
You know, the way Orange Danhausen and Trent, one of the best friends, reacted seemed like they were a little off But, you know, I kind of thought it was really, why wouldn't you want to team with Von Erichs in Dallas? Like, it's something to keep an eye on, I guess. They might be changing his character a little bit, but it seemed more general Orange Cassidy slacker vibe, which is not necessarily a bad thing given Orange Cassidy to me. But there might be something there. I'm not going to dismiss it because it was the response by his teammates was a little bit odd.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Number three, from a thought, cause, oh, wait. Oh yeah. Number one was the Omega thing that we commented on an hour ago. Number three, what do you think about the work of Roosh and Brody King in the Classic? I believe it's raising their stock in the company and fans' eyes. Yeah, I think Brody King's making a case for mm-hmm. getting a singles push. Roosh, we knew, was really good. My critique of Roosh, and this applies to a lot of wrestlers, is if you're playing to the crowd, you should be a babyface. If you're a babyface, you should not be playing to the crowd before a move that you attempt backfires. And he does mm-hmm. it a lot. And people don't like – a lot of people don't think about it. But I think there's quite a few fans who don't want to cheer for somebody who can't stay focused on the point of what you're doing. I also don't like – I think it's just kind of trashy when he spits. I think he did it like twice where it was just like mm-hmm. – and then today he grabbed a drink and he shook it up and he threw it into the crowd. It's like this is national cable Major League Wrestling, and that just feels like sort of, you know, spot show, indie show, house show stuff. So – I think there's some refinement there. He brings a reputation with him that doesn't color my appreciation of his athleticism, but it colors how optimistic I get about whether AEW should – optimistic, not the word – how much I endorse AEW going, yeah, let's get behind this guy and let's match his push to his athleticism. I just don't know what his character is, and that's important to me. I just need to have some semblance of who someone is. I would say he's been all over the place, but he just hasn't really been any place as far as that goes. Nothing has really stuck with me. So I know it doesn't matter to everybody, but I look at this through the lens of what helps draw money and what helps expand an audience. And I just don't know what Rush's character is. And so to me, being really good in the ring is great. And Azan is right to bring him up as someone who might be raising his stock, but there needs to be some more layers to this, and I also just think a little curating of some of his tendencies. Dan.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that is I thought all the matches were good tonight, but that was probably – he and Lethal, to me, was the one that did the least for me. And part of that's the nature of the match. It was pretty short. It was a sudden finish, but, you know, this wouldn't be the night that I would like – be as excited about. He's been good in the tournament, though. I agree.
All right, let's move to the next email here. Okay, so Jason, we talked earlier. He said, "Wait, I've called him before as an onsite correspondent." And also, if you remember, I'm a huge CM Punk fan. I'll email separately my complaints after I heard the flagship today. But this time, and what is even going on? The Golden Jets big Bill Stark segment was so bad it was painful and Swerve on such a wave of momentum bearing Hangman twice in a row, and then they have him job to Mox with the shoulder up. If this isn't some WCW Jarrett Russo shit, I don't know what is. Why say no outside interference? We have low blows for wins, turnbuckles removed in the Andrade match, Mox, I guess, winning by the shoulder was up, and Taz screaming that sometimes the refs don't see it all. My two favorite wrestlers are Punk and Ospreay, and I don't know if I can still watch this to wait for Ospreay to show up. I thought a draw or a Swerve win would make a star, yet AEW fumbles. I don't get it. I'll be listening in the morning. I hope you respond. So here's the thing. You said we should wait, and you're right. To, you know, I mean, this
I feel very strong about that.
Yeah, and that, but
this is
but
part
there,
of the bigger story, I think.
Yeah, but there is the issue of there's Jasons of the world who are like, I don't have faith, and I'm mad. Or I'm disappointed, and I don't want to tune in and be disappointed. There comes a point where you can just wait too long. You go back far enough, the Road Warriors winning the WCW tag team titles. Like, how many times can you screw the fans out of that when they were at their peak in Crockett? Hulk Hogan and AWA title, winning the title, celebrating, Eye of the Tiger playing. Fans leave the St. Paul Civic Center thinking they saw a historical, significant world title change for the Hulkamania, pre-WWF version of Hulkamania, although it's the same version. But in the AWA, and, the referee DQ'd Bockwinkel seconds before the pin, and the replacement ref's pin doesn't count, so they strip him of the belt. My point is, there's a whole history, and I pulled a couple examples from decades ago, where you disappoint fans too much because you're too clever or you don't want to do a brave finish or politics get in the way. Like, I get what you're saying, and you should feel strongly about it. And most people will stick around. But AEW's can't disappoint fans too much. Yeah.
I understand, but Jason's only got to wait two and a half more weeks. This is not November 1987, and then they finally give him the belts and have him turn heel a year later with the Road Warriors. It's a tournament. It's a self-contained story. I think it becomes a better story if you build it from beginning to end and you have some struggles along the way. Now, I may turn out to be wrong. Maybe they don't do much with Swerve from here on in, but I have a feeling he's going to get some redemption. And then talk to me. I'll tell Jason, give it. It's only two more weeks, man. Two more weeks and then the pay-per-view if you want to get the pay-per-view. But at least by the pay-per-view, you'll know who the two finalists are. So it's all coming to a head. It's a really good story. There are a lot I wanted to bring up. You know, one thing I really liked, they showed that little video clip of Andrade after he viciously went after Danielson's eye. But he still is like, this is the spirit of competition. I'm not a bad guy here.
Yep.
I'm out there. I love that. Like, that was – they told that story in 30 seconds, and that's the kind of stuff they should be doing. And so I've been wanting to point that out for a while. So
I like that. Yep.
Yeah. But
no, I think it's good. And I want to be this way also, is as you're critiquing a product, and it's not an obligation, and it doesn't mean you have to worry about feelings of people who are presenting a product on national TV that they want people to watch and get $100 million, $1 billion TV deals out of. They should have thick skin and can deal with critiques. I mean, they're putting their product out there. It's going to happen. Happens with the product we put out there, and I accept it and embrace it if it seems like it's coming from a good place. It's good to look for little things that are examples of what you want to see more of is my where I'm heading here.
Yeah.
You know, when there's something that you like, you want to also express, this is the type of thing that you can build on. This is the type of thing that makes sense, that adds a nuance to what's happening. I think a lot of criticism of WWE or not a lethargic, a sort of where people feel WWE is too antiseptic is there's a lot of, I think, good, sound execution of their philosophy and rules and structure, but there's not a lot of nuance and layering to how people act. And that's an example of it where you're like, hey, what do you mean? He entered the tournament. It's fair game. It's like, well, I don't like when referees stop a match because somebody might be hurt. Isn't that the point? Why would you back a wrestler away because they happen to be really effective with a move? Oh, because it looks like they might be really hurt? Well, aren't wrestlers usually really hurt when they tap out or get pinned? Like, I just don't get that. So this is a case where, wrestlers saying what an athlete would say. He wasn't being Draymond Green. You know, but you know what? Fans could debate it. Oh, that was out of line. You should
want to. And his buddies may be emotional, right? Claudio being emotional about it in the moment is fine. Like, everybody acted the way you would. And Danielson's going to take it like a man. I guarantee you that, because that's his character too. He's not going to cry over what Andrade did. I'd be shocked. But, you know, he may say, I'm going to come back and get you. But, you know, they don't highlight enough sometimes from their other shows, the things they do well. And to me, that was a real highlight of the entire show. Really liked that. And Dylan brought up, both he and I, you know, I'd love to see Mark Briscoe win some matches. And I think you brought up some of the guys that you knew were going to job going into the tournament. I put him at a higher level than Jay Lethal and even Garcia, given the story. But if you look at the math and you start to look at how the tournament's going to play out, he almost had to lose to Jay White tonight to keep that story compelling. So I totally get it. Mm-hmm. As much as I'd like to see him win, and hopefully he'll get some wins here toward the end.
A couple devil emails came in. Jorad from Canada said, Do you think it's possible Don Callis is the devil, and that explains him blending into the background and laying low and not being highlighted on every show? Well, or it's just Tony Khan's method of booking. there were a lot of people speculating Wardlow's part of the Devil's crew after last week's Dynamite, so that could be explained as Wardlow aligning with Callis. Thanks, and have a good night. Yeah, I mean, I think the Devil is going to turn out to be a faction. And they'll probably be a leader, but I think there's just been too many different body types and too many people involved in the beatdowns, and it just wouldn't make sense. Obviously it's not going to be Dark Order, but and hopefully it's a faction more formidable than Dark Order. But yeah, I expect something along those lines.
Yeah, Callis being a part of this could only help, you know, if any sense to tie him in with. But I mean, I'm sure if it is Britt and Cole, I mean, I could see them putting Callis in there somehow. He weasels his way into all sorts of other stuff.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Another devil thing. Mike and Hershey, you actually called. He said, I forgot one point about the speculation that Dolph Ziggler or Nick Nemeth could be behind the devil mask. As you mentioned, Shivani has mentioned that it seems like an inside job. To that point, the other Nemeth brother already works for AEW and could be providing access to the arena, et cetera, and be part of the goon squad in the black clothes. Okay. Anyway, probably a wild idea, but at least an alternative theory to the culprit speculation. What Ziggler's storyline beef with MJF would be, I have no idea. Oh, shoot, I thought you were going to tell us. But Ziggler as the devil would be a big surprise out of left field that could be exciting for many fans and maybe cringy for many others. Yeah, maybe most others. But even he's talented, but yeah, I mean, he's not a peak guy who you want to pay to see a pay-per-view. I mean, I sat down with Matt Patterson once after a WWE show, and, you know, I heard he liked Dolph, and boy, did he like Dolph. Like, he talked up Dolph Ziggler as a guy he was very high on. But that was more than a decade ago. Anyway, but even though he may be a mid-card talent from WWE, he is well-known, highly decorated, and a former world champion. Probably the type of wrestler Tony Khan is enamored with. Maybe he could find new life in AEW as a faction leader with his brother and some others, like Wardlow, in the mix. Who else – he's really asking us to go on this. He goes, who else do you guys think could fit in a Ziggler-led faction? Anyway, love the show. Thanks for the years of entertainment. I know, Dan, you don't even want to entertain this because it's –
Matt Cardona. Why are you doing this to me, man? I got up at 6:30 this morning to give a final. I can't think of a Dolph Ziggler led faction at this point of the night. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be disrespectful. But,
no, you're not. No, that's
you know,
totally
Wade, you talked earlier about, and I look forward to doing this with you and hosting these shows with you, but if Dolph Ziggler is the devil, you may have the last show with me, man. I'm like, don't turn into TNA. You can't do this to me. I'm not in love with the product, but I enjoy it enough that I'm happy to do these shows with you, and that could kill that enthusiasm. Just please no.
We'll close out with some more points that JB made here. Is Hangman Page being positioned as the first contender for the AEW title after Samoa Joe potentially beats MJF for the belt at World's End? Interesting. Yeah, I honestly hadn't thought too far ahead on this because it's sort of new that Hangman is you know, showing. I mean, obviously, yeah, the standout match with Swerve Strickland, but yeah. I haven't like processed what's going on in terms of, okay, last week MJF was a jerk to him, so if MJF's going heel, then Hangman could be a babyface opponent for him. If Hangman's going heel, then MJF stays babyface, or you just do Joe and Hangman. What do you think, Dan? What are the different routes?
It's fine that they had Punk over Joe at Wembley, but boy, I sure wish they would have went the other way with that, knowing what was going to happen. But I'm still perfectly fine if they want to go with Joe as the champion. I it's not like a Dolph Ziggler. I mean, it's like this guy he could afford to lose to whoever because he's the man. He's awesome. And he could be the world champion or he could be a role player. That's just, he could fit any piece in your promotion, in my opinion. And partially because of MJ's injury. But the great thing, if you make Samoa Joe champion, he's a true, you know, Ric Flair NWA champion. It doesn't matter if you're a babyface or a heel. Step it up and go after him. And he's going to take on all comers. And so if you have Joe as your champion, it you could go after, you know, Paige could go after him as a babyface. And that is very possible that they're laying the groundwork for that. And I would not object to that at all. I think that would all work.
All right. Did Tony, this is still JB from Detroit, did Tony put on too many tournament matches tonight? Don't get me wrong. I love how the tournament seemingly brought a focus to all these AEW weekly programs. But tonight, about 90% of the show felt like tournament matches, even if that wasn't technically true. I didn't look at the match times for the night. I mean, he kind of got it. He's got to.
Exactly. I think they figured out that I don't think they want to put too many tournament matches on Rampage, and I wouldn't do that. So they have put, you know, the Danielson match on there. But again, they've got everybody's got to wrestle five matches, and they have a hard deadline. So that's it's just math. It's not, you know, they looked at it and they thought, oh boy, we got, and I think at one point they were backing off of the idea that they were going to do the two top wrestlers go after each other on the 27th, even though they initially said that. But now that they're committed to that, that moves the timeline up even more. And I do think it makes for a more compelling tournament. It's the wise way to do it. So it's just a matter of they got to fit in, you know, however many matches and however many TV shows.
All right. I really like the Jay Briscoe tribute match scheduled for Final Battle this Friday between the BCC and FTR and Mark Briscoe. I think it has match your potential, knowing the effort all six guys will put in and the obvious backstory will only add to it. This match alone has me likely to buy my first ROH pay-per-view in many years. The recorded promo they did for it tonight was excellent as well. Dan, talk about the ROH tie-in and the cross-promotion, such as it was, for the pay-per-view this weekend, this Friday.
I mean, I thought it was pretty minimal, actually. I didn't catch a whole lot of hype for it, which is fine. It's not their big money maker. I'm considering getting the show, and it is, like, I know they'll probably have Athena in the main event, but that's, honestly, that's the money match. I'm excited about it. I mean, I'm just going to have to see what I'm doing on Friday night and how my grading goes, this, that, and the other. But, you know, they have these weird places where these guys are kind of ROH guys, they're kind of AEW guys. And I've heard you and Todd talk about this a bunch. It isn't the greatest way to get people excited about a pay-per-view, but then they'll put one match on there that you're like, oh boy, I really do want to see that one. And this match qualifies to the nth degree. I would say that.
Let's see. The fans of Texas seemed to be engaged all night, and they seemed to have incredibly high energy for the main event, which is always a good thing, as crowds tend to tire toward the end of shows. I also think it speaks to where both Mox and Swerve stand in the eyes of fans in terms of being over, with the babyface reactions that Swerve continues to get from crowds. I feel as though they will have no choice but to turn him face in the near future. A wrestler getting this over as a face organically isn't easy to do. But was giving Mox the win tonight the right call? I still think that ultimately Swerve will win the entire tournament, so it may be a moot point. So we don't have to readdress that. But Swerve is a babyface. I was looking at him in this match and after the match, and I just saw, I had this, okay, he was not a main event guy in WWE and NXT. He seemed a little his music making land, and that seemed more important to him than wrestling too much. And he seemed preoccupied with that and being cool. And just, he kind of dropped the ball on an in-ring promo. It didn't blow me away, and I'm like, oh, that was a moment for him to shine. But now I'm starting to look at him more and more, and tonight added to it, as an organic baby face who I am. If I'm Tony Khan, I put him in consideration to turn MJF heel and have Swerve beat him and build 2024 with Swerve as your centerpiece act. I think he's good enough in the ring and good enough on the mic and organically over, as JB says. So, yeah, Dan, your thoughts.
I have no objections to that whatsoever. I wrote down in capital letters, Swerve is a star, as he came out to the ring, in my notes. It seemed like his background, maybe I missed something, but, like, obviously he's got a great theme. He danced to it. People are dancing to it in the crowd. He's cool. Like, you watch him there at that Jaguars game. There's just a charisma there. But it seemed like they changed his background, Pyro, a little bit, which I liked. Maybe I just haven't noticed it too much in the past. I don't know. But, like, everything about his presentation is not what I was complaining about with Kenny Omega earlier. It's like I'm locked in and I'm conveying charisma, attitude, and confidence. And he carries himself like a star. He's being treated like a star. And I am not, I really feel like this is just a bump in the road tonight. And I would have had him lose clean, assuming they're going to have him come back and win the tournament, not have that kind of ridiculousness, because the story can be told, especially if he beats, you know, if he doesn't beat Moxley, as long as he wins the tournament or the block, even, I think it's a big step in the right direction. So yeah, he's hitting it. So some of the stuff he does is definitely not babyface stuff in the past, but it's always been compelling, and it's been that way for months and months now. And I'm a big fan. Like, I look forward to watching him more and more every week.
All right, finally, I know we're running long. JB's last point here. So what do you make of the announcement that Collision will be in Vegas along with the NFL the night before the Super Bowl? Do you think that this is a smart move by AEW to attract a large traveling crowd that will be looking for events to attend in town, as they will be there for the big game anyway? Kind of reminds me of the indie wrestling companies having events in the same city as WrestleMania during Mania week and weekend. I bet Tony is hoping his Jaguars will make a Super Bowl run so he can kill two birds with one stone. I don't like that phrase. But yeah. And he says, that's always love the show when everyone go VIP. Thanks, JB. Yeah, it's a good move.
Yeah, well, and it's in Henderson, which, if you're not familiar with Vegas, that's, I don't know, it's a good bit from the Strip. You know, it's 20 minutes, 25 minutes from the Strip, so it's going to be in the suburbs of Vegas. But I'm assuming that's like a 5,000-seat arena. It's not, you know, Henderson's not going to have anything too huge. Maybe it's 8 to 10. I need to look it up. I mean, when I saw that, I'm always looking for an excuse to go to Vegas, Wade. I was like, oh, man, they're going to have a Collision on a Saturday night. I might go out and watch some college basketball and watch the thing. But you try to go to Vegas Super Bowl weekend, and it's a little bit cost prohibitive usually. So I'll probably be watching that on the TV. But I like, yeah, why not? Like, why not exposure? You know, and you never know. You might get some celebrities to come to your show, and a little more, just a little bit. You're going to be more in the, you know, all these TV execs are going to be there, not that in Henderson necessarily, but you may get on their radar. They may become aware of it. I see. Yeah, it's no reason not to. I thought it was a cool idea.
Cool. Anything else that you want to bring up, Dan, before we,
my dog
has walked up to me and said I need
fine.
Some attention.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I'll just say, and I think you relate to it. Like, I'm watching the show, really enjoying the show for the most part, and that ad comes on, and we've talked about this so many times, how important music can be in wrestling. I hear Tom Sawyer, and I go back to 1983, and I go, man, I mean, I love the Freebirds, actually. I really like the Von Erichs, but I was a big Freebird. I thought the Freebirds were cool when I started watching. First wrestling I watched on a weekly basis. We got an independent station out of Springfield, Missouri in 1983. Started showing World Class, and I thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. Later, I became more that I thought Mid-South was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. But I liked both products a lot. And it just, I don't know, something hit me when I heard Tom Sawyer. It just, I'm really looking forward to this movie. It's obviously not a big, you know, don't take people that need cheering up. But, I can't wait.
You and I living through that in real time, and to all these decades later have a well budgeted name value star, you know, cast telling their story. I mean, we might roll our eyes and be disappointed, or might think, hey, it's a good job. They had to take some license with things, as happens, but that era was amazing, and that sportatorium. I got watching the trailer. I got like chills looking at
the
sportatorium.
It's amazing.
Like,
it's amazing.
The recreation of the sportatorium scene before an event. I've been asked this before, like, what venue and what era would you most want to go to? And I mean, Junkyard Dog at his peak in Mid-South, Bruno at his peak at MSG. From the era that, like, I was reading the wrestling magazines, like, plucking from that, I think I would choose a Von Erich Freebird sportatorium.
Yeah, I would too. And I mean, I'm like, I, I finally got to Starrcade 90, but I never got to the Kiel. I mean, you got to go to, you know, St. Paul Civic Center when it was still something, which is awesome. But I never got that at St. Louis, even though I was aware of it, even as a kid, because it was St. Louis wrestling. It was the capital of wrestling in the country. But yeah, Sportatorium, there's nothing like it. And I mean, I watched that Legends of World Class DVD, and they're like, people, I would have been one of those people. I want to go see where the Sportatorium was. And yeah. So that they have nailed it. Like I've been told you want to take somebody that's not a wrestling fan because they're going to enjoy it more. I've already recruited a friend of mine to go that's not a wrestling fan, and we'll have to report back at some point and compare notes, because I'll go to this one a couple times. I'm sure I'm excited about it.
I you mentioned St. Paul Civic Center. I got to see an old school, present for an old school sellout crowd, Vern Gagne's retirement match against Nick Bockwinkel, my first live event in 81. I got to be there and just breathe in the smoke-filled air and in an old building with a small concourse and the eclectic crowd, very different than wrestling crowds today, believe it or not. And so I feel like I got a real taste of the tail end of kind of that 1970s glory period. And so I feel like I experienced that. I don't feel I experienced anything like the sport. I got to, I went to ECW Arena multiple times and traveled in the early 90s to a bunch of WCW pay-per-views and, Joel Goodhart indie shows. I mean, I just went to Tijuana, saw Lucha Libre show with Ray and Conan and all. Paraguay. It was like I've experienced a lot, but the sport, I don't think there's any replacement for the Sportatorium.
No, I don't. I can't imagine. Now, my notes are nowhere near as impressive as yours, but I still am so grateful. Like, we had UWF wrestling that it hit for about a year before it went out of business. And we went to peak UWF in May 1986. My dad took me and my friends, and it was a sold-out Hammond Center, 7,500 people, which in a 9,000-seat building.
Yeah.
It was almost sold out. And it was, Hacksaw Doug and Ted DiBiase, Dr. Death, Cowboy Bill Watts, Eddie Gilbert, fantastic Sheepherders. Like, to me, and that wrestling ended. Like, that type of wrestling was gone not too much later. And so I'm just grateful for my little piece of getting to see that. It's kind of fun to think this movie is going to be great. I'm excited about it.
All right, Dan, thank you.
Absolutely.
This
enjoy
was a blast.
The ride. Yeah. Always great to talk to you.
Yep. All right. We'll talk to you later. Thanks to our on-site correspondent, Dylan. Thanks to our callers, our emailers. And we'll talk to y'all Friday night after SmackDown. Check out our flagship if you haven't yet on the Blue Logo Show.